jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 13 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. I'm guessing pretty much everyone in the Supercoach world is in a bad mood this week.
Yeah, it's certainly a little bit miserable playing the game when you get hit by unexpected injuries and suspensions around the buys particularly. And when you've gotten hit with it in the first week and then there's poor games to watch to boot, it just led to all around bad feel. So we're here, Mark, today and hopefully to inject some positivity.
No, we're here with positivity, all right.
I don't know. I feel like everybody's a bit down and out, so let's try and give people, you know, good options and help them navigate the mess. I mean, I suppose the silver lining is everyone is under similar sort of duress during the bye periods, obviously some worse than others, but by tuning into the show and still sort of caring, all you need to do is sort of better than the person next to you to come out ahead.
Speaking of that, mate, I am doing better than the person next to me.
Yeah, that's right. You beat me by a little bit. And I think you were worse set up for the first round of the bye, so a little bit annoying for me. Why don't we start with how you scored on the weekend then, Mark?
Do you want to talk about Michael Walters first, or do you want to do that after?
Yeah, you might as well bring it in now. I saw your tweet straight after he punched someone. You're like, ha-ha.
It was pretty dirty. Like, why would he do that? He just punched him as hard as he could in the guts, and it would have hurt a fair bit. And right in the middle of the buys, and like it gave away a 50-meter penalty. I think he lost 11 points. There were people out there that had the captaincy on him. Yeah.
I mean, like, of all the weeks to do that, like, this week is definitely...
I thought it was a good one.
Oh, I mean, he's ultimate Supercoach villain this week. We just did not need that. And he was a pretty big trade-in target. I thought 75, not great, but passable. And then in the last 3 minutes, punches someone, gets suspended. God damn it, Michael Walters. And to boot, you passed on him. And so you're just sitting in the corner, just chuckling and gloating. Ugh.
The good part about it, the silver lining is that the person that I took instead, Rocky, 100 on Friday night and could have easily scored more. Does that feel like a silver lining to you?
Boo earns.
All right. I actually, because I know that Dunny made the same decision. He took Rocky over Walters 2 weeks ago, and I messaged him and said, oh, you must be feeling all right about it now, because he was complaining to me a fair bit the first week. And he messaged back, I took Walters this week. So my message was not well received.
Oh, gosh. Had 1 foot in both boats, unfortunately, poor Dunny. So how'd you actually score for the weekend, Mark? I know you beat me by a little bit.
Pretty terrible. 14.72 on the back of just so many rookies. I had set up 9 premiums, 9 rookies, just because we had all those premiums out this week. I was set up to probably miss a few extra premiums compared to other people this week. And so just relying on Callum Moores and Lachlan Murphys and Oxter McInerney's, which like just a whole bunch of scores under 60. And then even some premiums like Jesse Hogan and Christian Petrarca only posted 60s. So yeah, it was a very, very tough week. I guess the one decision that I got really right was that I had the VC on Parker with the captaincy on Gorn, and I kept Parker's 113, that sort of got me about 40 points. So yeah, feeling pretty good about that one, and very happy to move on to this week.
I did Dalhouse, Mira to Gray, Miocek. So my round 14 buy situation was a bit stuffed, so I preferred Miocek over Austin because Austin's a round 14 buy player, and went early on Gray because he was the only upgrade target I really wanted to go with. All the late outs meant that I traded out Dalhouse, which ideally I wouldn't have.
Okay.
So a slight sort of change up, but look, I'm happy to get Dalhouse out of my team anyway. Yeah. He was averaging 80 and just frustrating.
I think I had Austin, Caulfield, Phillips and Savage were on 64 points at halftime between all four of them, but most of those guys redeemed themselves in the second half, particularly Austin, so I was pretty happy with that move in the end, as long as he can keep his spot in the team. Miocek was not doing well until about the last 10 minutes, so he would have been not overly happy with that one.
No, and nervous that now he misses in round 14 anyway. But look, I just had to go for it. And look, I like the 60K extra that I got from that downgrade. So I'll take that. I scored 14.44, so even worse than you. That's one of the ugliest scores I've ever seen in a buy period. Funnily enough, it only took me down 1,500 spots. So that's what I mean. Everyone's having a tough week.
So it only took you down my entire ranking.
Yeah, I can live with that. It's very tight, you know, around the 10 to 5,000 mark. There's not a lot of points that differentiates all those coaches. So, you know, a poor score can see you downshift by, you know, 5,000 ranks pretty quickly. So,
oh, wow. I wasn't aware of what was going on.
How tight it was down in the... Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Down in the dregs.
Yeah.
Come on, mate. All right, we won't do a group or league update until post-buys because it's not really indicative of where everyone's sitting. Different people are set up for different buy rounds, so we'll skip that for the next couple of weeks, and hopefully when we come out of the buyers mark, we'll be seeing some happy news.
Before we move into the show, can I just give a quick shout out? He might not be listening to this week, but just want to give a shout out to Hondo, long-term friend of the show, having a tough time, and just wanted to let him know we're thinking of him.
Absolutely, mate. Very, very good of you to do that. All right, Mark, in terms of what we're going to have a chat about this week, we're going to spend some time talking about the rookie trade-in options. Of course, most of us will be trying to upgrade this week, but I have a feeling that quite a few last week ended up doing more side swaps than they would have wanted to just because of the amount of outs, and so have left cash in bank. So I think the downgrade target is going to be actually pretty significant to consider this week so that we can actually make a couple of upgrades or one upgrade at least. I'm definitely in that situation. And then we're going to look at the trade-in targets that are fresh off the buy. So anyone who's facing the buy this week or next week, going to avoid until the next couple of weeks, Mark.
Yep.
All right, let's get into the questions. This first one is actually less of a question, but it's from Ben Sorter on Facebook. Why do I continue to subject myself to the torture that is Supercoach? I could read a book or play with his kids. Please answer me. Mark, what keeps you playing Supercoach during the tough times, mate?
I was a couple of things here. Getting a bit of escape from the kids is probably one of them, but it's about all about, I don't know whether you've read Dan Pink's book on drive, it's all about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. So in this game, we have autonomy over decision-making. It's our team. We get to really make the choices. We get mastery. It's like a game that we can continue to learn and try and get better at, and we never get to peak awesomeness. And it gives us a purpose. It's something to do through winter. It gives us a sense of community. There's a lot of intrinsic motivation associated with it, and that's why we keep playing.
Love that, Mark. That's very philosophical, and that resonates very much with me as well. So for anyone struggling with motivation, hopefully Mark provided a little bit of Supercoach inspiration there. You should go do some motivational speaking, Mark. That was very good, especially unprepared. That was great. Next question here is from BWaz or at BWarrell. Again, more of a comment. If I held Billings all year, if I finally traded him the week he got dropped when I needed him, then 24 hours later, he had 53 disposals and 3 goals in the VFL. Should I delete my Supercoach team? How frustrating was that for coaches to watch, eh, Mark?
He's been a very tricky one all year. I mean, I ditched him very, very early, so feeling all right about that. I do have him in my draft team, though, so very happy that he's done well in the VFL and should be back this week. Hopefully, with Richardson's job on the line, basically, he decides to give Billings a bit more midfield time, and maybe at 310,000, we should all bring Billings into our teams.
We did get questions about that, but I mean, the fact that he has a buy in round 14 probably means he's not a relevant trader now, right?
No, you'd want to see the week from him, see how he goes, and then maybe bring him in for cover. And geez, wouldn't all the people that had him, they'd be pretty filthy if you bring him in and he does all right.
All right, let's move on to the next question. This one's a real one. It's from Red 5, one of our patrons.
Real question.
A real question. Not a gripe. This whole show could have just been round 12 gripes. Red 5's asking about Laird. What to do if he's still injured? So we had a quick chat pre-show. He's listed as a test. We don't want to deal with all these premiums missing. At least Fife will be back because that was just a suspension. But Laird, surely, because he's averaging 111 in the back line, he's like the standout player. Like, you can't trade him out.
I don't think so, because everyone's in the same boat. And I know over the last 7 rounds, you're going to want him in your team. So I can't imagine a situation where I'd be tempted to trade him out just because he's so exceptional on his line. I mean, if he'd been on a big run just before the buys and was at 610,000 or something, then you could maybe make a case for using that money. But at 524, he's not even like overvalued.
Yeah. All right. Next question, Mark. This one is from Bosman, one of our patrons. He needs to trade in order to field a full team this week. I'm also in that scenario, unfortunately. All his rookies have very low break evens. Some have had good price movements already, so Fritch and Richards. Some haven't yet, so Tim Smith, Nick Caulfield types. Should he be culling the better rookies so that he actually has cash to play with, to upgrade with, or keep them as, you know, bench cover and reasonable scorers, and go early instead on getting rid of some of these lower price guys. And in some instances, they're not even playing, like Tim Smith.
Interested to hear your thoughts here, mate. I think that my preference is just get rid of the non-playing players. You just can't afford to be carrying those during the buys. So the Lachlan Murphys, I'm pretty sure he was named on the weekend. I'm not sure he actually got out there for long. Tim Smith, actually ditched him on the weekend. Like, I just I'm not carrying dead weight over the buys, especially with the carnage around. It does depend on your trade amount left. So if you were low on trades, like you have 10, 11 or less, then you basically are going to need that money as much as possible. And you can't be messing around with only getting 50, 60,000 per trade, or 100,000 even, trading out some of these rookies. So I really think that it's how many trades you've got left dependent a little bit, and also where you see your team going for the future. So what sort of bench cover are you looking at getting? I'm in the situation where, in order just to trade around the buys and maneuver around, I may end up with an extra premium, maybe even two, depending on how I swing things. So therefore, those high-priced rookies are not going to be as valuable on my bench, but other teams are set up completely different.
I think I'm very much more in the camp of trading out the more expensive guys and keeping any underpriced rookies. I know it's painful throughout the buys, but in previous years, I've been very aggressive about setting myself up for the best buy period. And I've realized that doing that via cheap rookies hasn't really panned out very well, because those rookies normally end up on your bench in the second half of the season anyway. So they don't really impact on your team after the buys. You're only going to have, you know, 6, 5, 7, 8 trades left after the buy. So a lot of these rookies, you might not even be able to cash in on. And so they're essentially dead, and you're only making the trades purely to get extra players on park. And the problem with rookies is sometimes you might make all those maneuvers, take the long-term sacrifice, and you only get like 50 points on field for it.
Yeah.
So I've definitely suffered in the past, I think, paying too much attention to the buys, especially around the rookies. And that's why, you know, Dalhouse, he's a good opportunity to side swap around the buys. At least I get a playing player, and hopefully I move from a guy who's averaging 80 to a guy who's going to average 95 on the run home, and sort of kill two birds with one stone. So I am really hating the fact that I traded in Ridley and Smith pre the buys, because really what that means now that they're dropped is I could potentially have to swallow a donut and just live with that.
Yeah.
Downgrading Smith and Ridley and Murphy, like if I traded all three of those blokes out, I'll have 200K rookies and I'll be able to upgrade to one 400,000 player. And that's going to cost me three trades. Like that's just not enough scoring on field to warrant the amount of sacrifice I'm making long term.
I think that that is, again, dependent on how many premiums you've already got, how close you are to fully upgraded, and how many trades you've got left. So you can maybe afford to get rid of one or two of those guys if you are already fully upgraded, or you only have one more spot to fully upgrade and you have sort of enough trades, you think, to sort of get you through the year. So it is still team dependent, but that's some reasonable advice there, Marcus. And I've been probably extra aggressive this year on non-playing rookies, depending on team selections this week. I don't have any in my side at the moment.
All right, let's get on to some actual bubble boys and some rookie trade-in options, Mark. I've listed all of the players that are available in our run sheet. We'll tackle the bubble boys first, and then we can talk about the one gamers. I've only included the players that are actually playing this week, so nobody on the buys. Let's start off with the buy-free players on the bubble. These likely going to be the most attractive options for the week, Mark. We'll start with Rourke Smith in the back line. He's a defender, 158,000, averaging 55. We've got Will Brody in the midfield, 187,000, averaging 60. Cam Paulson, a mid forward, 131,000, averaging 33. Unfortunately, all more expensive than, you know, the 123K, 117K rookies. Do any take your fancy? I know Will Brody last week you were sort of saying is a tad overpriced and you weren't sold on his scoring.
Yeah. And he didn't do anything to change my mind about that on the weekend. I guess the only thing that you would have in his favour would be that Gold Coast just have a lot of injuries in their midfield, and you would expect that someone's going to get the points at some stage. But at that price, now that you're only getting two scores out of him, You could bring in sort of someone from, there's a lot more teams that you can get players from now. So I think his value's gone down this week compared to last week. Not really interested in him, to be honest. Although, I mean, he could prove me wrong. I definitely see that. But just at the price, I don't think the value's there. Rourke Smith was actually someone that interested me as an Austin alternative. But with so many outs last week, I just felt forced into the Austin choice. Smith in some doubt for this week with Zane Cordy and Aaron Norton potentially coming back into the Dogs team. But fourth year on the list, had a lot of injuries in the first few years. I think that he could be a reasonable selection for the run home. He can keep his spot this week. And Cam Paulson, average of 33, pretty much has it all. If you make that trade to him so he can get that extra body on field, if he averaged 33 over the next 2 weeks, that trade gets you about 66 points. So that wouldn't be a great result.
Mm. All right, Mark, how about the players who have a round 14 bye but are playing this week who are also on the bubble? They're actually all Fremantle players, one in midfield, one in the rucks, and one in the forwards. And amazingly enough, they beat Adelaide on the weekend. So these blokes seem to be collectively doing their thing and pulling their weight for Ross the Cobbler, who was under a little bit of pressure after the previous week of some dour football. So potentially meaning a little bit better job security for some of these youngins.
Yeah.
We've got Stephen Giro, a midfielder, 102,000, averaging 51. We've got Scott Jones in the rucks, 117,000, averaging 43.5. Michael Apness forward, 153,000, averaging 67. And I think he was first round draft pick or something like that as well.
Top 20, yeah.
Scott Jones is actually an interesting one with McInerney on the bye this week, and so too are Gorn and Grundy. So yeah. For me, I'm tempted by Jones because downgrading McInerney to Jones gets me a decent amount of cash. Like yeah. McInerney's actually gone up to about 260, which is pretty cool, and will bring a warm body on field, which is great as well. And surprisingly, I'm looking at reasonably closely.
Do you want to hear what I have to say about that?
Is it dumb?
Well, you might not want to hear what I have to say. Sanderland's probably coming back this week, so Jones probably a less than 20% chance of actually getting a game this yeah. week, let alone for the rest of the year. So yeah. There goes your right coverage. 43 points as an average, even though they won. Is that really a warm body or is that something else? Yeah. And of the two likely to keep their spot, you would think that Apness would be much more likely to keep that spot with his ability to play forward more and ability to mark the ball. And it was actually quite interesting. I didn't watch all of that game, but watching him and Cox play as talls up forward, they actually looked pretty good, and they took a few marks and really helped link that play from half back into the half forward line pretty well. So don't think things look very good for Scott Jones, to be honest. I think that they do look all right for Apness. They've been wanting to give him a run for a while, so he may keep his spot in that team. The round 14 bye obviously makes it a bit tricky, and the fact that he's 150,000, so he's not that basement price. And realistically, with Sanderlands in the side, how much ruck time will he get, and will he be able to actually keep anything near a 67 average is probably pretty questionable. And there is some competition for that spot as well at Freo. They have got a few players competing as a tall forward. And onto Giro, he's probably the one that interests me the most because he is 102,000, so super cheap. Yeah, I was following the Waffle scores a bit on the potential ins for Fremantle about 6 weeks before he finally came in, and his name was consistently mentioned and regularly getting 30 plus in the Waffle, and they sort of seemed to maybe hold him back a little bit before they actually brought him in, just so that he was like cherry ripe when he got there. His scoring has not been awesome. What the game that I watched on the weekend, though, he was very good. Like, he was able to win contested ball. He had composure in traffic and made some really key plays when he did get the ball. So I think that Lyon will like him. I think that Lyon will keep him in the side if possible, unless he does like a bit of a Mitch Crowden and gets a bit sore and tired from playing in the AFL system in his first year. But Giro is probably the one out of the three that interests me the most. And the fact that you get him for 102,000 is a big factor there, that you get a bit of insurance on that. So when you're doing those downgrades, you can get that extra money to be upgrading with.
Absolutely. His name has been tossed around a lot in Supercoach circles, and this week certainly looks like one of the top options. So even though he's facing the bye next week, if you're desperate for a warm body this week, he certainly looks like a good option. Now, in terms of one-game players, Mark, unfortunately, there's not a lot who are actually playing this week. There might be some new debutants, hopefully, to provide a few more options once team sheets come out. But unfortunately, Josh Battle is probably the only one that has played one game so far that will be playing this week. He did score 77 for St Kilda as a forward, which is pretty cool. But again, facing a round 14 bye, so not brilliantly ideal. But would you consider going early on Josh? He's scored 77. So actually, of all the blokes we've talked about so far, his scores on board actually look okay.
Yeah, in a terrible, terrible loss, he was a shining light for them. I'm not sure. I think Josh Bruce came back from injury on the weekend and kicked four in the reserves. It was a big, big win. But I think that as much as they would like to play Battle, Battle's been in the system for 18 months now, and I think that he would probably be competing with Bruce, really. Like, they'd like to keep him in and they'd like to give him some time, but can St Kilda have that many tools playing in their forward line? It is going to be a question that they are going to face at some point. So I'd really like to see, going into round 15, where he sits. So one more game, the bye. Josh Bruce has played a couple in the reserves. Is Josh Battle still in the team?
So if you trade him in this week, more of a short-term option to hopefully, you know, if he's named, get some scoring in. But in terms of job security post the round 14 bye, it does sound a little bit more sketch.
And if you're trading someone in for 1 week of scoring, that as a rookie, like you were saying, a lot of the time you're just going to be better off eating that donut.
All right, last question in terms of downgrade options. This one's from at 17.7. There's rumors flying around that Ryan might be returning this week. That's Liam Ryan for West Coast. A lot of us had him early days, and his break-even was negative 85 because he had some massive scores before he went down injured.
Yeah.
I think he's like 190K, so pretty darn expensive. But, I mean, if he's going to continue playing, and, you know, there's definitely value in him and he's proven to be a decent enough scoring option, would you be tempted at all? I mean, it's not that much more than a Will Brody or, I mean, even Logan Austin only costs 30K less.
So I think that the first point is that the break-even at this point is completely irrelevant. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Buy free is definitely relevant, though.
Yeah, that's right. So any player that you trade in at the moment is not going to be traded out of your team for a rookie to, like, for a money-making purpose, unless you have a very different strategy to what I do, or...
Or you might need, like, one top-up on the run home just to get you a bit of cash. But, like, in all likelihood, one or zero or max two. But, yeah, you're absolutely right there, Mark.
So the interesting thing for me is Ryan's scoring was pretty up and down. I was really, really liked his game early in the year. But he could post 30 to 50s, I think. So there might be some low scores in there. So that's a bit tricky when you're playing 190 for him and you want to sort of be relying on him to score well. Darling's out, his mature age, and he did look really, really good at times. So wouldn't surprise me if he came back and actually averaged pretty well. What you really want to be considering is not so much his break even, but what's his scoring going to be relative to his price. And there's extra focus on what his scoring is in the next 2 weeks. Like, whether he scores 70s for the rest of the year, which would be a good result, or 70 or 80 for the rest of the year is not all that relevant. What you need is the next 2 weeks for him to score 70 plus on each week.
And as a small forward, we've already seen, like, he's prone to big games, sure, but he's also prone to poor games. You'd hate to trade in a 194K player and, you know, get a couple of 40s when you need him most.
Yeah.
So having said that, Mark, it doesn't sound like we are flush with great downgrade options this week again.
No, you'll be all over Scott Jones, even if he gets dropped. And I'll probably be bringing in Giro. And it's interesting because you said off the top of the show that most people wouldn't have a lot of money in their bank because we're all just covering to get rid of donuts last week. And so we're looking for downgrade targets and they're not there. So this is very tricky. I guess the one player we didn't mention was Ahern. And I know that you'll say, well, that's a player you bring in next week because he's not playing. But if you have sort of 19, 20 or 18 even on field this week, like a Fritsch or a Petrarca to Ahern does give you money to work with this week. And so you might think that that's a useful strategy given lack of good options otherwise.
Very good call out there, Mark. And I think actually a lot of people will be looking at that this week. I know in terms of buy pain, round 14 has been pegged as the horror round. So if you can manage 19 this week, I'd tell you almost the Hearn looks like the best option.
Yeah.
So if you had to downgrade to get a playing play this week, so you had to pick from one of those players that we've talked about so far, could you maybe do a top three there, Mark?
So at the moment, I'm looking to bring Giro into my team, but he would actually be on the bench for me this week. But just because I just need the money, The other players that I probably like are, if he's named, I don't mind Rourke Smith. Hopefully he can keep his spot. And probably Apness behind him, although they're both overpriced. So I'm not a massive fan of either of them. And Josh Battle would compete with them pretty strongly.
I think Giro 1, Rourke Smith 2, Battle 3 for me. But like, it's almost silly to put a 1-2-3 because it's so going to depend on where you need the players playing, what your buy structure looks like. Take those rankings with a grain of salt and pick the player that's right for your team and your buy structure more than anything else. And then remember, worst case, just eat the donut, 1 week's worth of pain versus dealing with a suboptimal pick for the next 11 rounds.
It might be also useful just when you're thinking about these decisions to just be aware that there's not a correct answer. There are some answers that it's a decision based on probabilities. So you might say, well, this guy's 60% likely to score 70 and 50% likely to keep his spot. And he's a bit cheaper than the other guy. And I need someone in that position. So on the balance of probabilities, I'm actually going to gamble on that guy. And that might not work out. They might not score this week. They might get dropped. And unfortunately, that is actually just part of the game we're playing over the buys here, that you just have to gamble on some players that maybe you're not overly confident in.
You know, what's the saying? In the land of the blind, the one-eyed Jack is king. So all you need to do is to be better than your peers in order to get away with a suboptimal pick.
Jesus, we've gone from high-level technical language to pearls of wisdom like that. You will learn more than Supercoach on this podcast, guys.
All right, to the trade out targets, Mark. This first question is from Scott McNaughton from Facebook. Is Fritsch a better long-term prospect than Petrarca or Dalhouse? That's a very interesting one. And based on his scoring since he's moved into the wing,
yeah,
Fritsch has actually been very, very good to us and potentially a bloke that you might want to keep, even if you were looking to trade him out to the long-term. In the short-term, he still has value left in him in terms of price movement. So that could be a consideration as well.
What do you think?
I am currently thinking that I trade him out, but I don't have Dalhouse, Petrarca, and Billings left in my team. So in terms of trade out targets.
Did you trade out all three of those guys?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So it's like I trade out Tim Smith and I bring in, you know, Apness, or I trade out Fritsch and I get like Wingard. You know, like
yeah,
that's the choice I'm facing. And so Fritsch is a natural out for me, I think. But if I was faced between the decision Petrarca, Fritsch, like, I'd be pretty tempted to keep Fritsch and ditch Petrarca.
Keep Fritsch. I think that we just heard a bit of a sneaky call out there from you on Chad Wingard. He is your boy. And 375, just posted a good total, had 18 centre bounce attendances on the weekend, the most for the Power, and looked all right. That does seem right up your alley. Mm-hmm. Out of Fritsch and Petrarca, I personally am probably looking at keeping Petrarca because a couple of reasons. He suits my team. I'm likely to probably end up with him on the bench. And so the dual position, yeah. So the dual position status on the bench actually makes a massive, massive difference. I mean, he may end up not in my team as well. Like that is a live possibility. So that advantage over Fritsch is actually pretty big. And I think, like, I know that Fritsch scored better than him on the weekend and has of late, and he definitely has had a good run. I'm not totally convinced that Fritsch is going to run home stronger than Petrarca. Petrarca's definitely, he scored 66 on the weekend, but he actually did some pretty good things, and he spent a reasonable amount of time up on the ball. And I know that didn't translate into score, but maybe there's more of a role for him doing that in the run home. Fritsch has been really, really impressive, though. I don't think it's an easy call. I understand why people would make a different call to me. Fritsch's ability to score well in the last quarter, ever since like really early in the season, has just been awesome, and that's just getting better. So he just always manages to post a good score, and I'll probably just be trading him to someone that I consider to be a genuine premium that's underpriced, maybe like a Josh Kennedy or Chad Wingard sort of player.
Look, I don't think that either are, you know, top six forward material, let alone forwards that you want to keep for the entirety of the year. Like, Fritsch is doing well, but you're still sacrificing 10 points off, you know, a true premium. So ideally you shift both of them off. And so your consideration of, you know, putting Petrarca, you know, as a swingman between two lines is actually pretty good there. But when I look at Petrarca as a player selection for Supercoach, just right off it. He's hit 100 once. And every time I watch him play, I'm like, you're very impressive, but you don't seem to be converting it to Supercoach points. At some stage, you can't keep having your fingers crossed behind your back going, well, I hope you turn it around. And the worst part is that we really were quite excited about Petrarca as a starting option because, you know, we wanted him to graduate into the midfield as, you know, side bottom, Dangerfield, Ablett types have done in seasons past where you're so talented, that's where you learn your craft, but then you get more midfield time and one season, bang, away you go. Viney's missed for the first half of the season. You know, like they've had injuries in their midfield and Petrarca's not stood up during during that time. You know, now that, you know, Viney's back in the team and all that, like I don't see it necessarily turning around massively. So between the two, if I were to keep one based on scoring potential, I'd be keeping Fritsch. If I was keeping one as a potential bench cover, then absolutely, I think it's a good call out. That mid-forward flexibility means that, you know, if you can bring him in for 100 points and replace a poor premium score of 60 a couple of times on the run home, you know, that's 80 points that you pick up from a player like Petrarca. That's certainly a consideration. All right, next question in terms of trade out targets. This one's from Red 5, one of our patrons, asking about side swapping Hibbard or keeping him as a D7. So it's been a little bit disappointing. And, you know, last week he played without Lever in the team and still only managed 53 points.
Jesus.
Not good at all. He's now facing the bye. So, you know, we talk about the bye being a good time to get rid of underperforming premiums. What do you reckon?
Yeah, look, if you can, this is probably what we were saying all preseason, that this is the time to get it. As you know, probably you'll get rid of him and he'll get dropped and score and have 53 possessions in the VFL. Or he'll do what Goldstein's done to me. Getting rid of premiums is always tricky, but geez, this is a lot of evidence so far that Hibbard might not be able to turn it around this year.
Yeah, to me, it feels similar to the Dalhouse trade out I made last week. I think if you can keep him as D7, ultimately that's a good thing. But between trading out an underpriced rookie, a suspended or injured true premium like a Dusty or a Fife last week, I'd much prefer to get rid of an underperforming premium. So I think you can keep or hold, but if you're looking for a trade out option, I wouldn't hesitate to trade him out. All right, Mark, we'll move on to the trade-in targets now. And special guest is now with us. And so I'll do a little intro to our guest. His name is Bryce Mitchell or at Bryce Mitchell on Twitter. And for anyone that's been following Supercoach or engaging in Supercoach on Twitter, you probably would have come across Bryce's great work in terms of price projections and break-evens. And he's been posting great resources on Twitter. So if anyone's on Twitter and hasn't seen that yet, make sure you check out his handle to get some of that analysis. It's been great to see somebody sort of add to the Supercoach landscape and provide that analysis, and very happy to welcome Bryce onto the show. Welcome, mate.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on. Hopefully I can provide some insights into some numbers today and help the community.
I know you've had a lot of retweets and a lot of likes on your work, mate. So well done on that, and certainly keep it up. I know the Supercoach community are loving it.
Yes, thanks very much. It's certainly a difficult time in the Supercoach year, crunching all the numbers and working out the optimal way through the buys. So this is a time of year that makes us or breaks us. So looking forward to it.
He was made for this show, Marcus. He uses big words like you.
We both work in IT as well, so common bond there. All right, let's get back to the questions, Mark, and hopefully Bryce can help shed some gold here. First one in the trade-in target section is Brian Leonard's question, one of our patrons. Is Ed Curno a legitimate top eight midfielder? Is there a reason we don't talk about him as an option? Is there a chance that he's going to drop off? Ed is averaging 114 for the year, so it's gotten to the point where you can't say it's really a flash in the pan. He's at 570,000, and he's fresh off the buys as well, which is certainly a particularly attractive factor to that pick this week. Bryce, any thoughts on Ed? Have you considered him at all so far this season?
So not really at this stage. I guess he's a fairly non-exciting player. I like to have exciting players to watch in my team. He's getting the job done. He's pretty consistent with his scoring. I personally have one spot left in my midfield, and that's probably going to go to Josh Kelly or Clayton Oliver. I have Rocky at M8 at the moment, who I'll look to put to M9, but I don't have any problems with anyone selecting him in. He's off his bye. You don't have to wait. If you got the money there to make the upgrade, I think it's a solid move.
Mark, have you thought about Ed at all?
He's not someone that comes into my consciousness very often, to be honest. Because as Bryce said, he's awesome, isn't he? As Bryce said, like, you want someone that's going to be a bit excited that you can cheer for. You're not going to cheer for Ed tagging someone and getting the ball under the pack.
And I think something that goes along with sort of that excitement factor is he's not a player that's going to burn you either. Whereas Clayton Oliver, Josh Kelly, you could foreseeably see them going on a run, averaging 120 over a patch and going, damn, I wish I had them. Whereas Ed Curnow, he's very dour, he's very consistent, and that's great, but certainly less exciting. But because he's buy free, if you need a trade-in option this week, that should certainly lift him in your consideration set. And so I'd rather take an Ed Curnow buy free over a more exciting player that still has a buy to come up.
I'd rather take Josh Kelly, who is on the buy.
Yeah?
I know that I'm being facetious, mate, but I have no interest whatsoever in Ed Curnow in my team.
The other factor for me for Ed Curnow is that his price is about his average, so you're not getting any value there. If there was a little bit of value such that he was 5 points below his average or something like that, I might be more interested in him. But there's other players around the buys which are going to be up to 5 to 10 points below their average, and I'm a bit of a bargain hunter, so I'm always looking for that opportunity. So yeah, I'll be passing on him.
So I guess the true answer to Brian's question is we don't talk about Ed because he's boring.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right, the next question is from Peter Holmes, another one of our patrons. And I don't know, would this guy classify as boring as well? He's asking about Ollie Wines, another bloke off the buy. But you know what's in Ollie Wines' favour is a very, very tasty price point. He's priced about $475,000. I've previously had him in my team and he has punished me in seasons past, but seems to be doing a little bit better this year. And in particular, his game on the weekend was pretty high scoring. Was it 140 plus or something?
Yeah, he was a beast on the weekend, mate. And I think what they have, is it 7 or 8 of their last 11 at Adelaide Oval, which is he does seem to do a lot better there. So that is an incentive to get him. The problem is that he's never actually averaged over 100 or 101. And he's pretty durable, but his ceiling does seem a bit capped. Like, this would have to be a breakout half of the year. So you're basically asking for something to happen that hasn't happened before, which is always tricky in Supercoach. But at his price, buy free, with the draw, there's some potential that he could actually do something that he hasn't done before. And I guess the only reason why you'd consider him over the player that Bryce was talking about is his price.
Yeah, I guess the price isn't that appealing to me. He's 472K, which is a price at average of about 95. He's averaging 98. I don't see his average changing too much for the second half of the year. He's been very up and down this year and in previous years. He's got a 57, a 76, and a 66.
So I'm going to read out his run home and note that Mark's already made the comment about playing at home quite a lot on the run home. And if this doesn't sort of get you a little bit more excited, I'd be surprised. So Western Bulldogs, not in the 8 this week. Melbourne, round 14, they are in the 8. Carlton, not in the 8. Saints, not in the 8. Frio, not in the 8. GWS, not in the 8. Bulldogs, not in the 8. Adelaide, not in the 8. West Coast in the 8. Collingwood in the 8. Essendon, not in the 8. So on the run home, he only faces 3 more teams currently in the 8. That's pretty tempting on top of the fact that he's playing at home, surely.
Do you know what that is good for? Tommy Rockliffe.
All right. I can see the interest in Wines isn't huge. And look, I think there's still a few things in his game that he probably needs to improve to overall lift his ceiling, and that's kicking efficiency and all that. But, you know, if the team end up winning more games than losing, he should get less possession under duress, and hopefully that means better disposal efficiency and better scoring. And look, I've picked him in seasons past. I can see him working out, and I can see him as a reasonable trade-in option, especially if you're struggling for cash to upgrade. We started the show talking about the downgrade options being limited, a lot of them being more expensive than you'd like. A lot of rookies also, like Tim Smith, who have been dropped and haven't appreciated properly in price, all affecting the amount of cash that we have to play with. So I wouldn't begrudge anyone picking up Ollie Wines. Seems like a reasonable enough risk on the run home.
Yep.
All right, that wraps up this week's show. Let's go to a captain's corner to round out the week. Last week was just brutal for the captains. You actually got away with a pretty good score with a 113 on Parker there, Mark. Most of us copped a Gorn-type score with a 76. So we're hoping for much better things this week.
For me, I think McRae into probably Tom Mitchell is a pretty good bet. Just note that the Suns have been giving out an insane amount of midfield points lately. We saw a few Giants score really, really well against them on the weekend. I know Jeremy Cameron was one of them, but Josh Kelly went nuts with 40 touches. So maybe those that managed to hold on to Billings, he might be a good catch of captain option this week.
Oh, that's ridiculous. All right. I think my top option for the week is Fife. So I'll be rolling with Fife VC and then into the Mr. Consistent Mitchell as the backup captaincy option for me.
Not a bad bet, mate.
All right, that wraps up this week's show. I do want to give a shout out to our Patreons for their ongoing support. Most of you have stayed on for the year, so massive thanks. And hopefully you've been appreciating the little bonus shows we've been doing. And a big thanks to Bryce, his first little stint with us on the podcast. I think that went pretty well. Keep up the good work on Twitter and with the break evens, mate. And hopefully we'll be hearing from you soon. Mark, anything to leave our listeners with from your end?
Nah, mate, I'm not sure 100% what I'm going to do. I guess just be aware of some of the multi-positional trades that you can do. So I just want to explain a quick one. It's going to be a little bit complicated.
Super nerdy.
So I'm actually looking, say I'm looking to trade Fritsch to Gray. What I can actually do this week, or what I actually need to do this week to get my team set up properly, is to click the trade on Fritsch, bring Jack Higgins into my forward line, bring Nick Caulfield into my midfield, then bring Sicily from forward into defense, and then trade Fritsch to Gray in exactly the same position that he started in. It just manages to get Sicily back, Caulfield to the midfield, and Higgins into the forward line. So I can't do that with a positional swap. I can't do a sub to do that, but I can do it via trading.
Wow, that's pretty whack. You're doing a triple trade across three DPP players to end up trading a forward in for a forward.
That's right.
Wow, okay. All right, and with that very complex note, we'll wrap up the show. And we'll catch you all next week for the last week of the buys. And hopefully we'll be all smiling a little bit more with less carnage and surprise around the team sheets this week. We'll catch you all next week. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Let's get crazy.